from KQED.
Coming up next in this morning's forum, an hour all about Bay Area regional parks, which are seriously threatened by budget cutbacks. We'll find out the extent of the problems facing our public parks, and we want to hear from you, our listeners, about what concerns you most about the status of your favorite or local park. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's forum program. With the state proposing closure of 70 of the 278 public parks, we want to focus this hour on the nature and extent of the problems facing our public parks and find out your concerns about the status of your local or favorite park. I ought to mention that this is a result of $33 million in budget cuts passed by the legislature. And joining us are leadership representatives from various parks throughout the Bay Area this hour. Philip Ginsburg is general manager of the San Francisco Park and Recreation Department. Good morning, Phil Ginsburg.
Good morning.
David Holland is assistant county manager and former head of the County Parks Department for San Mateo County. And Dave Holland, good to have you with us.
Good morning.
And Pat O'Brien is general manager emeritus of the East Bay Regional Park District. Welcome, Pat O'Brien.
Thank you.
Glad to have all of you here, and it gets a little bit overwhelming sometimes. Last week we were talking about cutbacks in libraries. Today we're talking about cutbacks in parks, and so it seems to go these days. But let's begin by talking about what's happening, well, right here at home, at least as far as San Francisco is concerned, Philip Ginsburg. Ways of dealing with these budget cuts. These are difficult times. What are you doing?
Well, they are difficult times, Michael, but it's important to put it in this in perspective a little bit, which is that 80% of Americans now live in urban areas. So this is actually a moment for us, and it's almost sadly ironic that we're talking about problems with park funding and budget cuts when we should be talking about opportunities and the revitalization of our urban park system. But the truth of the matter is that state and local park systems receive less than 1% of all state and local funding. And so that leaves us, frankly, scrambling a little bit to find new ways to kind of, you know, keep our parks clean, safe, and beautiful, and our rec centers open.
You mentioned state and local funding. There's also 16 parks of these 278 that receive federal funding under the Bond and Water Conservation Fund. Isn't there perhaps conflict there as far as suddenly defunding what gets federal funds on the basis of the revenue they get?
Well, that's a little bit about – that's unfortunately how the budget game works these days. But there have been cutbacks in federal funding, cutbacks in state funding, and frankly, cutbacks in local funding. And while everybody recognizes the importance that our parks and recreation facilities play with respect to the fabric of cities, we actually need to be investing in them now, not cutting them.
So what's on the chopping block here specifically? What parks?
In San Francisco, we actually have a pretty good story because this is not our first year of significant challenges. Over the last 7 years, we've actually been forced to cut about $43 million in general funds over the last period of time. And so we have been working pretty hard to find new strategies and new ways of making sure that we can keep our parks and rec centers open. But we have profound shortages. We're short about 200 gardeners. We're short about 80 custodians. We have a huge system. We have about 4,000 acres of open space, 220 neighborhood parks, 25 rec centers. We have swimming pools, golf courses, about 150 different playgrounds. And so, you know, we're short in all areas of our operations right now.
That's true in the East Bay as well, Dave Holland?
San Mateo County?
Yeah.
Yes, that's true there as well. I think when you look at San Mateo County, you have a little different mix because we have the county, which has natural resource parks, so we have 17,000 acres of natural areas. But also within the county, we have 21 cities that manage programs at a much smaller scale, but similar to what Phil has talked about in San Francisco. So when you count it all collectively, all of us are pretty much in the same boat. What it is doing, though, you know, probably in a positive way, is forcing us to look at sharing across the county and maybe how we stage equipment, maybe how we look at repairing some of our areas collectively for the population or communities around there, regardless of whether it's county or city.
Consolidating, consortium-type stuff, you mean?
Yep, yeah. Yep.
Is that happening?
That's just in the front end of happening, so the economy's driven that one, but I think that's a positive aspect of all of this in dealing with the cuts.
And now to the East Bay, Pat O'Brien?
Well, East Bay Regional Park District is a little bit of a different animal in that we're an independent agency devoted strictly to regional parks. Our board of directors is elected, and we have our own share of small share of the property tax. We cover two counties.
Excuse me, property tax go directly to park revenue.
Correct.
Right? And this is the first time, I think, since the Depression you've seen them drop property taxes?
It's the first time probably since the Depression, yeah. since we've seen property taxes actually drop. In the early 90s, they leveled off, but they've actually dropped now. We lost about $17 million in revenues since 2008. That's a measurable impact. We have about 110,000 acres we operate in 65 regional parks.
So you're doing something called smoothing. Could you explain that to us?
Yes, and it isn't a drink, but it is. We've reduced our expenditures, and so that we're mandating that all department heads spend less than their budgeted amount, and then that amount of money is saved, and then a certain portion of it's rolled into the operations for the following year. So we're although we've lost 35 positions through attrition, we actually added a couple more back in this current year using the smoothing process. But you can't do that forever. But it is helping level things off and keeping a certain level of operational maintenance going.
We've been talking about different kind of funding. Dave Holland, state park bonds, the last big one, I believe, was Prop 21 back in November, went down.
Went down, yeah. And there are a lot of park systems that are very dependent on that. We have projects lined up into the future, leveraging money both with that and other sources. And so that's going to have a pretty major effect on creating more backlog maintenance, more projects that aren't getting handled.
So where are you going to get the revenue that you need?
That's a magical question, isn't it, Michael?
That is the question, isn't it?
It is the question. So right now there aren't a lot of good answers. One is in the sharing and trying to take advantage of what you have and leveraging up it a bit. The other is looking at some new opportunities, I'd say, in fundraising that goes actually toward maintenance. Normally, for many of us in our foundations in that, the money that we raise there goes specifically to projects rather than the real issue of long-term maintenance and paying salaries.
I was also going to say, Phil Ginsberg, there's been a lot of heat on you because of concessions, Stowe Lake particularly. Let's talk about that as a revenue raising, at least a way to get more money. In fact, I think, at least from what I read, most of those recreation park directors that you had are gone, and now you've got middle managers who are working on how much revenue they're going to bring in. At least that's according to
that's
the North Side
report.
It's out there. So let's dispel it.
I think that there are three fundamental strategies for park systems to actually kind of deal with our budget problems. One is we have a responsibility to be much more efficient all of our parks departments. So we're experimenting with things like apprenticeship programs. We've reorganized the way we deliver recreation to provide more programming with less resources. We've cut back on workers' comp and overtime costs. It's what, you know, park users and taxpayers expect, which is government needs to be efficient. The second strategy is what you've talked about as a little controversial is to the extent that government is funding parks less, we have a responsibility to actually make up the difference with earning revenue on our own. And that's where concessions and concerts and special events, partnerships, philanthropy can kind of help close the gap. We've done – Dave mentioned this. We've done something very innovative in San Francisco, which is that we've started to attract philanthropic dollars to support operational expenses. At Jolie Rec Center in the Bayview, we have a family foundation that has given us over $150,000 to keep Jolie Rec Center operating an extra day a week. So that's an example of a strategy. Mm-hmm. But the third way is that, you know, as a society, we need to decide that parks warrant greater public investment. You know, parks, if you want, I'd much rather have front-end investment in parks than back-end investment in an emergency room or in jails. I mean, parks ultimately help save money for, you know, help improve the public health of our communities. They help keep our communities safe. And these are – it's a much smarter way to go.
Actually, I was looking at a whole list of what parks do, and I want to talk about those because I think it's important for the public to realize, and of course we'll hear from the public on this as well, things like that you mentioned, such as public health, public safety, that aren't necessarily always factored in terms of public education or public understanding. In fact, it seemed to me that without any staff, without any budget, a lot of these wide-open spaces will be just open for, I don't know, meth labs and who knows what else. But getting back to just financing and revenue for a moment, Pat O'Brien, you've been talking over there in the East Bay about reductions from unions?
I'm sorry, reductions in the what?
About reductions from unions to generate more revenue.
I just really didn't quite understand what you were saying, reductions in...
Reductions from, in other words, unions like we're talking about...
Oh, your union negotiation. Yes. Yeah. It's the same. You read this all the time. Agencies are in fact... negotiating with their unions to get more of a balanced package. And the East Bay Regional Park District is currently in negotiations to have the unions participate a little bit more in the costs, extraordinary benefit costs that comes with these packages. And as you know, medical costs have gone up substantially over the past few years, way higher than and other benefit costs, way higher than the cost of living. So we're trying to get some balance back into that, and that would help the budget and also help us not lay off people. So that is a big concern, is we don't want that those expenditures to go up so high that you have to continue to do further layoffs.
Well, this is being done, you know, with fire, with police, and
yes,
so forth. But to what extent are the unions amenable to negotiating or to taking reductions to save the parks? I mean, talking about considerable reductions, dramatic house.
In San Francisco, the union staff has actually been great. Our Union of Recreation Directors, SEIU, worked with us in a labor management partnership to reinvent how we deliver recreation given the budget realities that we're facing. Our gardeners and our rec directors and our structural maintenance staff have all taken pay cuts. All the managers have taken pay cuts. I think everybody recognizes there's something that's unique about park departments, which is that the people that work for them truly love parks, and they understand the importance that what we do plays, you know, the importance of what we do is in our community. And I think our staff, by and large, has been incredibly supportive and creative in chipping in to solve some of these challenges.
Well, I want to go to what I mentioned earlier, that is how parks serve the public. And indeed, I put out the question to you, the public, that I mentioned at the top of the hour. That is, how do the parks serve you, and what about your favorite park, and what are your concerns in terms of sustaining and keeping the park, particularly in light of these cutbacks? I'd like to open the phone lines now and invite you to join us. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786, and we welcome your involvement in the program. Let us know what parks mean to you, how they matter, or perhaps maybe think they should be on the chopping block in this day of serious austerities and the like. Our toll-free number, again, is available. It's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. Less than 1% of state and local funding, as was mentioned earlier, goes into parks, but I think you were intimating something important here, Phil Ginsberg, a while ago about how they're a magnet to businesses, how they keep people in the cities, how they're really an urban center.
Sure. You know, when you think about it, parks revitalize our neighborhoods, our communities, our cities in a number of ways. First of all, parks attract businesses. Both corporate CEOs and workers say that quality of life is one of the three most important factors in locating a new business. There was a recent survey of about 1,200 technology workers that revealed that a community's quality of life increased the attractiveness of a job for them by 33%. Parks create jobs, not just within the park industry, but all of the economic, indirect economic activity that flows from parks. Nationwide, parks employ over about 160,000 people. They indirectly support about 6.5 million jobs and contribute about $700 billion to the economy. That parks increase property values and grow taxes. Parks and green space can increase property values by as much as 25%. And they also obviously increase local tax revenue. Golden Gate Park, for example, is visited by about 15 million tourists every year. So significant amount of tax revenue and income that results. Parks improve public health. Child obesity has tripled in the last 30 years. And less than 25% of all adults are actually meeting the Center for Disease Control's recommended amount of daily exercise. It is logical. It's demonstrated and also logical that you're going to exercise more, you're going to get out more if you live near a park.
We've also got public safety because you look at statistics about when juveniles, especially in the summer, are most apt to get in trouble, and they often go to parks as a result. But let's talk about environmental things here too, Dave Holland, because it reduces the energy demand. It reduces stormwater runoff, enhances
air quality.
I mean, there really are some benefits, and there are green benefits because the less stewardship you have, the less management you have of parks, the more environmental risk, period.
Right. And
I feel like I'm a salesman for parks, but thing to sell.
You answered the question. Good job. They do. They serve as a kind of a natural benefit to the environment out there, not just to air, not just to water runoff, but as refugia for a lot of animal and plant species. So down in our parks, we've got mountain lions right adjacent to neighborhoods doing well and not threatening the neighborhoods. We've got endangered butterflies, endangered snakes, the San Francisco garter snake, the red-legged frog, and we have to manage the habitat for all of those. But all of those have a bearing on us as humans, too.
Also enhance the groundwater recharging. I mean, there really are some benefits that sometimes people just don't take into account in this whole equation. Pat O'Brien,
We also have a lot of shoreline parks, so we're protecting shoreline habitat and also providing public access through trails. We have over 1,000 miles of trails. So as was previously indicated, the health factor for Americans is very important, and walking or hiking is some of the easiest ways that people can get exercise. And the parks provide a fantastic opportunity for people close at home to get that health benefit. We've got a partnership with Kaiser Foundation on a program called Trails Challenge, which is free to the public. You just log on, and you can log on your miles and visit the various parks. And it's a tremendous program. We just opened it up again this year. We have over 8,000 people signed up already.
All right. Now, we know that parks are vital. We know how important they are. And we'll hear from our listeners about specific parks and what they want to save and all that. The parks that you love, that's why I'm opening the phone lines and asking that you participate in this. But you know the argument. I mean, it's a triage argument. Why should we save our parks when so many other things need to be saved? Libraries, for example, which we talked about last week, and health care. And so it goes in this day of dwindling dollars. What do you say to that?
Well,
Phil Ginsberg?
I mean, I think, you know, Dave, Pat, and I would all say pretty much the same thing, which is that, you know, in an era of limited resources, parks are a really smart investment in our communities and in our neighborhoods for all of the reasons that we made. We'd much rather have front-end investment in parks and public recreation than, you know, back-end costs associated with, you know, public health care and public safety,
youth violence. Mm-hmm. I mean, they provide an opportunity for kids to be much more productive in the future. I mean, they've demonstrated that. Kids get to explore. They get to test boundaries out there. They get to socialize in a community setting, which is pretty critical in the long run for having creative non-crime outcomes, the unstructured play, the stuff that we all grew up with, walking through a creek, balancing on trees, climbing trees, all those things are really critical for creativity.
Well, in humans, as Phil said, 80% of our population now lives in an urban area. But urban areas, what does that mean? That means an artificial environment, one that we built, is structured. It is not a natural environment. What parks allow us close to home is to get back into that natural environment, which instinctively is where people want to be. The reason parks are so popular is there's a deep-rooted instinct to be in nature. And parks can help fulfill that to a certain extent.
Let me read a couple of emails here, and then we'll get to your call shortly. This is a listener who says, I'm tired of hearing people complain about their parks closing. If you wanted your parks so much, you should have voted for the tax on the ballot that would have kept them open. It was warned that this would be a consequence if it didn't pass. And here's John, who writes, the only reason I have for getting out of bed each morning is the East Bay Regional Parks. They are truly magnificent. I have become pretty cynical about local and state government in California, but East Bay Regional Parks seem to be very efficiently managed, and it would be a tragedy if the current state economic crisis led to cutbacks in park operations. Just tell me where to send a check. I'd be happy to donate to the regional parks. Pat O'Brien gave you a wide
open. Sending it to the main office. It would be very appreciated. That kind of support is incredible.
All right. We could do a whole pledge hour here on parks.
That's
right. Let's take a caller, Chris from San Jose. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Has the city looked into outsourcing parks maintenance to save the city money and still keep the parks open? I know in San Jose we've done the same thing, and the city has found out that they could actually save money by outsourcing.
Phil Ginsburg?
Well, we've looked at all kinds of partnerships, but we are actually not outsourcing our park maintenance. We have a pretty sophisticated operation, and it's something that we take a lot of pride in. I think you raise a point about just creative ideas for, you know, saving money and raising funds. One way that we've actually created a partnership is we no longer have enough staff to actually operate in all of our smaller clubhouses. And we've worked very creatively with the nonprofit community to provide programming and services in our facilities and in our buildings when we can no longer do it.
Let me thank the caller and try to get as many of your callers on as we can. Richard, you're on.
Hi, good morning. Before I tell you about two great parks in our neighborhood, I want to thank Director Ginsburg and all the Rec Park people for the very creative and positive ways they are managing in these tough times and not only looking at cutting expenses but enhancing revenue. We have two great parks in our neighborhood, their rec facilities, Buena Vista Park and Randall Museum. Buena Vista's 36 acres of woodland and right in the middle of the city, great views and wonderful woodland forests. And then Randall Museum is an incredible resource that's just gotten a wonderful state grant that's going to allow them to expand. We need for both of those continued dedicated staff that we're fortunate to have working together with volunteers from the local area and who also love those facilities.
We thank you, Richard, for that call. And we're talking about your parks here, recent budget cutbacks around the Bay Area threatening regional park operations. We're checking in with the East Bay, San Francisco, and San Mateo County park officials about the extent of the problems facing our public parks, and we want to know what concerns you about the status of your favorite park. Again, our toll-free number available to you, 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us by phone or by email, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. We'll continue with Pat O'Brien, General Manager Emeritus of East Bay Regional Park District, David Holland, Assistant County Manager and former head County Parks Department, San Mateo County, and Philip Ginsburg, General Manager of the San Francisco Park and Recreation Department. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. 70 of the 278 state parks are on the chopping block. Possibility of actually those parks closing down. We're talking about, well, the threat to regional park operations here in the Bay Area. And we have with us in studio Philip Ginsburg, who's general manager of the San Francisco Park and Recreation Department, and Dave Holland, assistant county manager and former head of the County Parks Department in San Mateo County, and Pat O'Brien, who is general manager emeritus of the East Bay Regional Park District. And we're going to go to more of your calls and emails. In fact, here's Question, Pat O'Brien, for you. To what extent is East Bay Regional considering selling off some of its substantial parklands to developers? There are rumors that the Coyote Hills area in Fremont might be open to development in the future. Can you address this?
No, the park district would rather fall on the sword than sell property. We're used to hunkering down in bad times. The park district can always go into a land bank status where it just holds the property and wouldn't be open. But we haven't really done that. Coyote Hills, the park district's actually gaining property at Coyote Hills. There is a developer adjacent to that park property, which they've received approval to do development there from the city of Fremont, and they are dedicating a fair amount of property to the park district, which will expand the park as opposed to any reduction.
Well, that'll put those rumors to rest. Dave Holland, your territory is San Mateo, but this question is I hesitate to use the word propinquity, close by. Our neighbors in Menlo Park have banded together to form a support organization for our local park, Flood Park, which the county announced it planned to close indefinitely due to budget woes. We're pleased that the county has met with members of our Save Flood Park grassroots group, and we're encouraged by their efforts to work with us and the city of Menlo Park to reopen the park. Neighborhoods may need to follow our model and organize support organizations like our newly formed Save Flood Park group to provide much-needed funding and volunteers to keep the parks open. Thank you for this opportunity. Happening over there?
Happening, yes. Yeah. One of the items we looked at out of our 18 parks is looking at closing Flood Park, which is in Menlo Park, currently closed while the pipeline project goes through there. And the city has been, over the past several years, interested in the playfields there. So we're trying to see if we can work out a situation where the city would take over managing it but not close it. And yes, the neighborhood group's been phenomenal.
And it could be a paradigm for other neighborhood groups that we're talking about, as the caller suggests, the listener suggests. Here's Ernest, though, says just down in the South Bay area again. I'm curious about the exclusive parks in some cities, many of them in the peninsula, that only allow local residents. Do they get any state or federal funding? If so, how can they continue to exclude non-residents?
I can't answer that for all those, but many of those are funded straight basically through the city and through the city funding rather than state or federal monies, because then they're open to the general public usually as a condition of those monies. So,
and Phil Ginsburg, here's John, who says, "Dear Mr. Ginsburg, this middle-aged dad and youth mentor was shocked by what I learned recently of San Francisco's current policies regarding our baseball and softball fields. According to a high rec and park official, our ball fields are available for use only for a fee. Worse still, the fee is a whopping $25 per hour. So if three or four kids want to play ball for 2 hours, they have to come up with $50. I was also told that the ball fields are closed in the summer on the ground that spring is baseball season. What the? Policies like these must be reformed if our town's reputation as a child-unfriendly city and a city harsh to the middle class and the poor falls even lower."
Well, a good chance to debunk a couple of myths. First of all of our ball fields are free for San Francisco's kids. We do not charge permit fees for any of our leagues or school districts, and we make our fields free for our children.
Giving this dad false information.
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the fields, we have a great field in Golden Gate Park, Big Rec, that's actually being renovated right now to actually improve it. Summer's a little bit of a slow time with respect to league play. We have challenges in San Francisco with actually the amount of ball fields we have for our kids, and it's one of the things that our department's been most focused on is adding play. And thanks to we talked about partnerships. We have a partnership with an organization called the City Fields Foundation, who've helped us increase the hours of play at all of our ball fields. And so we've actually, with their help, we've actually been able to add 65,000 hours of play on our sports fields every year.
What is there I'm just curious, in the Bayview, because there's been a lot of complaints and concerns about the a dearth of African-American ball players coming from kids in ballparks that are available to them to play in. I mean, you know, you're outnumbered now by players from the Dominican Republic and so forth. It used to be really kind of roosting pads, so to speak, for black kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a challenge. That's a larger demographic challenge for the entire city and county of San Francisco, but we're certainly doing our part. We're partnering with the San Francisco Giants, who run a junior Giants program. We have a league called San Francisco YBL, San Francisco Youth Baseball League, that is focused on the Bayview and some of our other underserved communities. And again, the City Fields Foundation, we're actually in the process of trying to build ball fields and increase play. We want to We get it. Living in a city is hard for families, and we want to make it as easy and enjoyable to use our parks as possible.
Let me bring on more of our callers. We'll go to Berkeley. Harvey, you're on.
Hi, Mike. Well, it seems that California is the only oil-producing state in the nation without an oil extraction fee. Alaska, Sarah Palin just raised their extraction fee to 25% of every barrel, every barrel of oil, and Texas also receives about a 25% extraction fee. I believe that both the there's right now a petition to help education in California, and also I believe that the park systems can be helped by an extraction fee, which would be worth billions and billions of dollars. And besides that, the oil companies are also the creators of global warming, which are causing the diminishment of our forests, the rapid forest fires and all that. And I'd like to see a portion of our gross national product, especially the part, a major part that's given to our industrial, our military-industrial complex to be used to fight the forest fires in the parks and a lot of the soldiers, instead of fighting wars on other lands, let them be used to fight the forest fires in our national parks, which are just going to get bigger and bigger because of global warming. So those are a couple of things. It's time to charge an extraction fee to the oil companies. They're ruining our forests, and they're keeping all the money to themselves.
All right, Harvey, thank you. Get an oil tax. Good luck.
One thing Harvey hit on, which I think is accurate, is there are some untapped sources for potential funding. And the oil extraction fee is certainly highlighted in that we're the only oil-producing state in the country that does not have an oil extraction fee. And, you know, that should be considered, and a portion of that should be considered to assist the parks.
Well, we talked in the last segment, in the first hour, about redistricting the legislature and all that. Maybe that'll bring some changes because it's been impossible to get an extraction tax. Speaking about other sources of revenue, here's a listener, Tony, who writes, in response to the Great Depression, that generation built the Golden Gate Bridge, reforested the landscape, and created the park system. They built libraries and pushed for universal education. The future will see us as the generation that gave up our heritage. We're the barbarians smashing our own gates. Where do we get the money? Prison reform. You're getting all kinds of suggestions along these lines. And by the way, you're getting a lot of questions about state parks, although, again, we're talking here this morning about our local Bay Area parks. And here's a listener who writes, Golden Gate Park stables have been closed for years. Reopening the stables would create revenue. Why hasn't anything been done? Phil Ginsberg?
It is a great idea. We would love to see the stables be rebuilt. We have about $1 billion worth of deferred maintenance needs in our system. There was an attempt a few years ago to actually rebuild the stables, and we were unable to actually raise enough money to do it. And we've been focusing on a number of other projects in Golden Gate Park at the moment.
Well, we'll focus on more of your phone calls.
East Bay Regional Park District operates three state parks, Del Valle, Crown Beach, and East Shore, and does not receive any funds from the state to do that. And with declining revenues, that's putting increased pressure on the park district in terms of its overall operations.
Again, that's Pat O'Brien, General Manager Emeritus of the East Bay Regional Park District. And our next caller, Bill, you're on.
Hi, thanks for the show. Mr. Ginsberg referred to the City Fields Foundation a few times there. That's run by the Donald Fisher's two sons, and they're sponsoring a project in Golden Gate Park to turn the soccer fields, 7 acres of grass in the west end of Golden Gate Park, into AstroTurf. They want to expand the present area of the soccer fields. They want to put up massive 60-foot lights all around the perimeter of this AstroTurf area, basically lights on the order of what you see in AT&T Park and Candlestick. The AstroTurf contains lead and other toxic materials, and when it rains, that toxic material will be getting into the surrounding soil. These lights will be up at night until 11 p.m. at least three nights a week. I'm not sure if it's every night, but three nights a week. So it's completely changing what the whole nature of Golden Gate Park from a place of nature that has an ecosystem that animals live by into this man-made park is not of nature.
Well, we hear
the club is fighting it. The Audubon Society is fighting it. They didn't want to do an EIR for it, and so they were forced to do it. The EIR is going to be
Bill. Hold up for a minute, because we're getting a lot of your consternation here and your concern. I think Phil Ginsberg wants to address some of the things you've brought up already.
Sure, it's a legitimate public policy issue all over California. There are those that actually love and adore synthetic turf fields, and there are those that don't like them. There's a lot of hyperbole in the caller's concerns, but this is an opportunity to take a really poorly maintained, poorly conditioned soccer field in the west end of Golden Gate Park that is riddled with gopher holes and all kinds of challenges, that uses a lot of water, and turn it into a field that will allow an additional 6,000 hours of play. I mean, you see some of the tensions in that scarce resources create for just people who've called in today. You have one caller who said, you know, I want more of an opportunity for my kids to play on our ball fields, and another caller who says, don't increase the amount of play you can have on your ball fields. And
well, but what about, I think maybe the argument you're saying here, Bill, is you'd like to see something there for play, but not with all the lights and AstroTurf and the like?
Yeah, it's used right now for play. And if they want to cut out the gophers, they can put a four-foot wall around it, which will cut out the gophers. There's no need for lighting at night. There's no need for AstroTurf. This is a little pet project of the Fisher Boys, and something so massive should not be in the hands of Phil Ginsberg. He's not elected by anybody, nor by Mark Buell, of the president of the Recon Park. This should be put to the vote of the people. This is an arrogant abuse of power that's completely changing the nature of Golden Gate Park. So,
would you be averse to a vote of the people, Phil Ginsberg, on this?
Well, there's been a significant amount of public process in this field already, and I understand that the caller doesn't like it. It's something that has created passionate viewpoints for people like this caller, but also for young families that are leaving San Francisco every day because there aren't enough opportunities for their kids to play. And we talked about the public health benefits and the of park systems. We need to give our children more of an opportunity to exercise and to get out and play. And this project will add 6,000 hours of play just at this field alone.
I appreciate the call. We do need an opportunity to hear from more callers, though. And let's go to George. You're on.
Hi. Well, here's a question that people ask about parks. When there's such obvious popularity, when there's so much use of the parks by people in the system, the state, the county, the regions, the cities, and then there's budgetary pressure to shut them down or put them on cool storage, what happens if a concessioner steps in and says, well, we'll operate the parks? Isn't there a lot of pressure here from concessioners who would like to get their hooks into the parks?
Dave Holland?
I think there are a lot of concessionaire businesses that can do a great job with helping with the management of it. I wouldn't say right now they're really pounding on the door to take over parks. Generally, as a figure for public parks over the last 40 years, you get about 20% back on the dollar as far as paying for them. So it's not exactly a great business proposition for folks. But in various aspects, maintenance and other things, there's a number of ways to structure it depending on your parks.
Do you want to add anything, Pat O'Brien?
Yeah, there's some clear areas where concession operations work, operating golf courses, operating various high-use areas, certain boating areas, et cetera, that marinas, that can work well. Overall, operating a park, it depends on the location and the type of park. The vast majority of parks, though, as Dave Hall indicated, and I'm sure Phil would agree, are public investments, and they're there
to be operated by the public, and they really don't lend themselves to pure enterprise. But enterprise can play a role, and a very helpful role.
Yeah, Phil Ginsberg, want to add?
I agree with Pat and Dave's comments. I think concessionaires can play a role in the overall fabric, particularly in ways that enhance the enjoyment of park users. In San Francisco, we've been very, San Francisco, there's only people love food almost as much as they love their parks, and we've been very focused on a program of food concessions in our parks.
Is there a competition there? I don't know. Food might eclipse the parks, I'm afraid.
I'm a little biased.
Many foodies in this town.
Concessionaires that can enhance the park user experience, whether it's with food or music or entertainment, can be positive for both the park user and help sustain operating costs of keeping that keep our parks clean, safe, and fun.
And we go to more of your calls. Bianca, joining us from Piedmont. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to turn our attention to the positives. I'd like to thank your guests first for the wonderful job that they're doing. I understand that there are so many different competing needs and different groups advocating for their special interests, be it soccer fields or places to dock your boat or whatever the situation is. But I'm in the East Bay, and the Redwood Regional Park District is doing a phenomenal job. The parks are open to everyone. There's lots of different uses. There's dog walking. There's horseback riding. I see field trips regularly up in Redwood Regional Park. I'm a mushroom hunter, an avid mushroom hunter, and I go out and I get passes so that I can go into watershed protected areas and just some of the most beautiful, untouched, pristine land here in Redwood Regional and in Briones Park. And you all are doing a really wonderful job, and I wanted to thank you for that and hope that we'll continue to support these parks because they're just so important for all the reasons that people have listed passionately today. So thank you for your show, and thank you for your good work.
And thank you, Bianca, for that call. Now, here on the other side of the continuum is Jason from Albany, who writes, "This show so far seems to be a cheerleading show for park managers. When I go hiking, I often find evidence of chronically poorly managed parks way back before the current recession. As an East Bay resident, I see popular running and hiking trails that have never been weed whacked, so I have to deal with ticks and poison oak overhanging the trails. One restroom and washed out footbridge haven't been repaired in years. My impression is that many of these parks are managed by incompetent bureaucrats."
Well, I'd like to know where those were, because our staff does a very good job of maintaining the trails and doing a really good job with the restroom. So whenever there's a problem, I think the park district's been very attuned to taking care of it.
Let's talk about what people who have problems
can do.
That's
not to say there isn't problems and people need to.
Which is why I'm asking you, if there's a problem, should they go right to you guys, right to the top?
Yeah, right.
And it's an open door, and it's like the suggestion boxes are not ignored?
They're not. In an era of declining resources, which has been a lot of the topic of the show, we need volunteer park stewards as much as we ever have. And we need people to kind of help us, keep our parks clean and safe. And I think the frustration of the author of that particular email is our frustration, too. We are really challenged in keeping our parks in a condition that, park users deserve.
You've got big maintenance budgets, and you've got big maintenance problems, don't you? I mean, all the parks do. The state parks do. The national parks do.
Absolutely. And I think also this is a time to really thank volunteers who continue to be there. For instance, with trails in our county, we have a large equestrian population, and we have a volunteer horse patrol that looks at the trails, talks about bridges that need to be repaired and culverts, and then also gets out and does them. So. Yep.
All right. On we go to Harry. Thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I wanted to second what that earlier caller said. First of all, with regard to the soccer fields, I think that Mr. Ginsberg is dodging the discussion he made totally, and I totally agree with him. Makes great, excellent sense. With regard to the system of privatization of Golden Gate Park, I'm very much against that. There's over $500,000 going into this so-called concessions and so forth, putting in trucks that spew out diesel fumes and add nothing and bring in very little revenue, and these contracts are expensive to negotiate. With regard to the Arboretum, the San Francisco Botanical Garden Society has spent well over $100,000 for a lobbyist, Sam Louster, to lobby the Board of Supervisors successfully. And the city has spent $90,000 on new ticket booths, $15,000 on the maps and another $15,000 on renting the ticket booths, plus other expenses we don't know about, plus the hundreds of thousands of dollars on staff time. And every time this there's a lawsuit is with the case with Snow Lake and with the soccer fields, might come to a lawsuit yet. And also the recycling center, it costs the city a lot of money. And
let me cut to the chase here, Harry, because you bring up a lot of things, and I think it gets down to how the dollars are spent. Phil Ginsburg, what kind of measures do you have to actually control spending or to be vigilant about how dollars are spent?
Well, 96% of our operating budget is spent on staff that are actually in the field, our gardeners and our rec directors and our structural maintenance shop. So the overwhelming percentage of the dollars that our department spends goes to keeping our parks clean and safe and our rec centers open and our pools open.
But you're going to have people like a couple of the callers who are going to obviously disagree about how the money's spent on Stowe Lake or on the soccer field and so forth.
Scarcity creates tension. There are scarce resources and people have a lot of views about – are very passionate about their parks and have a lot of views of as to, you know, what's really important to them and what's important to one caller may be very different than to what's important to another caller.
Well, let me thank Harry. And since he mentioned the Arboretum, here's Jane who writes, I hope somebody addresses the new Arboretum entrance fee for out-of-towners, which will doubtless turn into fees for city residents, as well as if the optimistic revenue projections therefrom don't materialize by 2013. The mission of the Stribling Arboretum has been, since its inception over 70 years ago, to provide a city refuge for San Franciscans and visitors. It is, in fact, on public land, therefore supported by public taxes. Long story short, the new admission charge has nothing to do with revenues, which by any measure would be minimal when we look at the San Francisco city budget in total, and everything to do with a change of mission pushed by privatization interests to transform a beautiful and educational public space, which has served generations of San Francisco, into an important botanical garden with a specialized clientele. What a shame.
Yeah, I mean, we get no joy in charging fees, but this is the challenge that we're all talking about. The botanical garden is a jewel. It's 55 acres and has tens of thousands of different species of plants. It's a plant museum, and we have 11 gardeners that care for the botanical garden in that 55 acres. And to put that in context, we only have 3 gardeners that work in all of McLaren Park, which is 250 acres. And so to help subsidize the operating expenses of that garden, we've begun charging non-residents and tourists. We want to keep the garden free for San Franciscans, but the revenue that is coming into the botanical is actually helping to subsidize the salaries of 3 or 4 different gardeners to keep them working.
What a primo job that is then, if there are only 3 or 4 of them. I mean, working outside.
Well, there's 11 total, but the revenue from
McLaren.
Yeah.
Here's a listener who says, and this dovetails, Dave, along with what you were saying before, I'm pleased that parks are striving to be more efficient. I've often wondered why the local, county, and district park jurisdictions in the Bay Area haven't banded together to maintain its parks rather than having duplicate administrative and equipment inventories. Obviously, many of the jurisdictions overlap geographically.
Yeah, and I think that's especially true in the county that we're in, where we have 21 cities inside the county, and we're looking at how we band together now. We're looking at, can we share senior buses? Can we share some of the programming? I think another area, though, when we look at open space, we have a large amount of open space on the peninsula, and we've got 5 or 6 major land managers in there, and we are working together now to look at whether there's a construct for us managing collectively and also raising funds collectively. So,
all right. And I have to read an email here from San Rafael, because we're covered with East Bay, South Bay, and San Francisco, but don't have anybody here from the North Bay. Don't take exception. Sometimes it's difficult to cover all bases, and when you get 4 voices talking, you can't even sometimes tell who's talking. But here's somebody from San Rafael who writes, although there's no representative Marin on your program, one of the most well-beloved parks of all is in Marin County, China Camp. China Camp offers beautiful bay vistas, wonderful hiking, biking, jogging, picnicking, camping, with a historical museum. It's one of the most visited parks by people throughout the Bay Area. But because of ample street parking, the park does not generate much income, a likely reason it has been cited for closure. Instead of closing it, how about charging for parking along the street? Getting all kinds of ideas for revenue.
The state doesn't operate the street, so they'd have to come into some agreement with the county of Marin, because I believe that's in an unincorporated area.
Which they could do. I mean, certainly theoretically.
It's possible, certainly.
Can someone explain why Baedeker Park and the Tenderloin is always closed on the weekends? My daughter sings at Glide, and it's bizarre to see the only park in the area closed so people lounge on the park cars.
It's Baedeker Park in the Tenderloin. Baedeker is a really important space for us. The Tenderloin has got one of the highest concentration of children, and we are actually in the process of a $6 million park renovation at Bodecker, thanks to the support of the Trust for Public Land. That's going to result in a much more well-designed space. Right now, the way the park is designed, there are some public safety challenges associated with the space that require use of the park to actually have some supervision.
Tammy, thank you for waiting. Tammy, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to know that let you know that the city of San Carlos, we subcontracted our landscape maintenance and janitorial, and we actually save $500,000 per year, and they've had great success with the landscape contractor by subcontracting.
Okay. It's been certainly an embarrassment of riches as far as the way people are helping to try to strive to save their parks and the ways of getting maybe more money. Let me go to another caller. And this is a younger caller, Henry from El Cerrito. Hi, Henry.
Hi.
Tell us what's on your mind.
I like the parks. I like Children Park because there's a little farm there. And you can see the animals and you can just like get some lettuce at home and feed the goats and there's like a play structure and there's a trail that you can hike on, and at Christmas time Santa comes and you can go on the merry-go-round.
Boy, you've got all a lot of good reasons there. You're how old, Henry?
6
years old and have become a really steadfast park lover. Everybody here obviously
thank
smiling.
Thank you for loving your parks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks. And Tilden is a magnificent park with all kinds of attributes, as was just said, so I couldn't say more than that.
And thank Henry for calling in. It shows we have the younger demographics locked up here in this listenership of ours.
Future,
thank you all for being with us.
Voters.
Good luck to you all, and onward and upward. Philip Ginsberg, General Manager of San Francisco Park and Recreation Department. David Holland, Assistant County Manager and former head of the County Parks Department in San Mateo County, and Pat O'Brien, General Manager Emeritus of the East Bay Regional Park District. Thank you all for being with us on Forum this hour, and thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We appreciate your listenership and your support, and remind you that you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or calling 415-553-3300. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.